Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines will be on a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. I would also like to inform parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Please stand by for the first speaker.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for joining today's press conference announcing the 2017 Atlantic Hurricane Outlook. My name is Chris Vaccaro with NOAA Communications. I just want to go over some housekeeping items for you, and then we'll get started. First, for those joining on the phone and also for those in the room, the Hurricane Outlook remarks, the Hurricane Outlook figures will be read out around 11:20, so look for the materials, including a multimedia press release on NOAA.gov around 11:20, and we'll provide the press release, a paper copy, to those of you in the room. Our host will introduce our speakers in just a moment. Their bios with their full spelling and titles of their names are in this room here. We have paper copies of the bios, and also the bios are available online as well. If you have any additional questions after the press conference, please see me or my colleague Maureen O'Leary here on the right. And now I would like to introduce our host, Dr. Bill LaPenta.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the NOAA Center, National Center for Weather and Climate Prediction here in College Park, Maryland. This beautiful green building opened in 2012, so this is our fifth anniversary here. And I'd like to invite everybody back for the first public open house. That'll be in September 16th, to be exact. As the director of the National Centers for Environmental Prediction, headquarters in this building, I am responsible and oversee the Climate Prediction Center, which is going to provide you with the hurricane seasonal outlook later on this morning. The Climate Prediction Center also provides seasonal outlooks for precipitation and temperature that are used for decision-making to support agriculture in this country. And they also monitor El Nino and La Nina conditions and try to predict them as well, because they have large impacts on weather throughout across the globe. The National Centers are a critical component of the National Weather Service's strategic outcome to deliver a weather-ready nation. We partner with other agencies such as FEMA. We work closely with weather forecast offices throughout the country to provide impact-based decision support services for the nation at large. Other centers in this facility include the Ocean Prediction Center, which provides marine forecasts, watches and warnings for hazardous weather over the Atlantic and Pacific basins. The Weather Prediction Center provides guidance for hazardous weather associated with heavy rainfall, snowfall, and ice. And the Environmental Modeling Center here also provides the development of numerical guidance systems, which basically form the foundation for weather prediction and seasonal outlooks that are provided by the entire weather enterprise. And then Central Operations is responsible for making sure that the models run on time every time at a 99.9% reliability rate and make sure that information gets out to the people that need it. Other centers throughout the nation include the, we also have space weather prediction capabilities in Boulder, Colorado. We have the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, and we have the Aviation Weather Center supporting the FAA in Kansas City, Missouri. And, of course, the National Hurricane Center located in Miami, Florida, provides the nation with outlooks, watches, and warnings for tropical systems that could have extreme impacts to the U.S. coastal territories. I would also like to acknowledge Jerry Bell, who is sitting here in front of us at the Climate Prediction Center, who will be available to provide any questions or answers that you might have with regard to the outlook. I want to thank him and his team for putting this together every year and supporting us here today. I am now pleased to introduce the speakers lineup. First, we're going to have Ms. Mary Erickson, Deputy Director of NOAA's National Weather Service. She's going to speak about some improvements that we've made in the Tropical Meteorology Program that supports the hurricane forecasts and predictions. Then Ben Friedman is NOAA's Acting Administrator, and he's going to speak about how NOAA is gearing up for the hurricane season before announcing the outlook. And then finally, Robert Fenton is here representing FEMA. He's the Acting Administrator, and he's going to talk about the importance of preparedness. So, again, I appreciate your time coming this morning. This is a really important part of preparedness, And at this point in time, I'd like to invite Mary Erickson up to the podium. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Dr. LaPenta. I'd like to take a few minutes to update you on recent and upcoming improvements we're making to hurricane forecasts and models, and new approaches we'll be taking at the National Hurricane Center this year to more clearly communicate risks and impacts of hurricanes to our coastal communities. Our ongoing multi-year effort to improve hurricane track and intensity forecasts has yielded significant benefits to the nation, and we're continuing to advance this program. Here's a little historic perspective of how far we've come. In the 25 years since Hurricane Andrew devastated South Florida in 1992, we've improved the accuracy of our track forecast issues 3 days in advance, 65%. So let's talk about what that means. 3 days out, we've reduced the average track error by 190 nautical miles, from 280 nautical miles down to 90. 2 days out, we've reduced the track error by 120 nautical miles. And 1 day out, we've reduced the average track error by 90 miles. For track forecasts issued 4 to 5 days in advance, we've reduced the error by 40% since we started producing these forecasts 15 years ago. We've increased the lead time for tropical cyclone watches and warnings by 12 hours. We now provide these warnings up to 48 hours for a watch and 36 hours for a warning. And under our Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program, we've recently met our 5-year goal of improving both track and intensity forecasts by 20% each. That's a really impressive achievement. These longer lead times and track error reductions are helping us fulfill our pledge to build a weather-ready nation by giving people and their communities more concise, accurate, and timely information to prepare for hurricanes' impacts. When we narrow this track cone, local officials can pre-position resources in the right places to accelerate the response effort and avoid unnecessary evacuations. But the primary goal of these improvements is to pinpoint where the biggest impacts are going to be so that we can work alongside with our core local, state, and federal partners to help protect lives. Speaking of our partners, we're now taking our forecast the last mile to more consistently connect with local, state, and federal decision makers. We want to provide the services that they need to keep America safe in the face of extreme weather. We don't just issue forecasts and warnings anymore. We're working with these partners on the front lines to ensure their understanding of the range of possible impacts of these extreme events and to provide continued situational awareness as these weather systems evolve. This collaboration is improving the nation's readiness. Better accuracy bolsters the public's confidence in our forecasts, which leads to better preparation and decisions. We're also offering new communication tools at the National Weather Service this year to improve our warning capabilities and assist the public with understanding the impacts and with their preparedness. Some of these have been offered before on an experimental basis, and so they might sound familiar. But this year at the National Hurricane Center, we'll start using them in an operational way. The first announcement is that we will be issuing storm surge watches and warnings to help the public understand the impacts of rising water and the need for evacuations. Storm surge is one of the most dangerous elements of a hurricane, but it's often overlooked because folks are focused more on the wind when they hear about a hurricane. So we're offering these new watches and warnings to help people have the best information possible at hand while they're making critical decisions. The public will also receive advisories, watches, and warnings for even tropical disturbances that might not yet be a cyclone, but we do think will threaten and impact land with tropical storm or hurricane conditions within 48 hours. A new experimental visualization tool will also be available. This tool is called the Time of Arrival Graphic, and it will allow the public to easily see how much time they have to prepare before damaging winds will affect their community. The National Hurricane Center is also adding a feature to the familiar track and cone forecast graphic. Beginning this year, the public will be able to click on the graphic and see how far outside the cone the damaging winds can possibly extend. This can often be hundreds of miles. I also have some exciting news about upgrades to the models that we use to inform our hurricane forecast. The newly updated Hurricane Weather Research Forecast Model will go live this summer, This model now better represents storms at a higher vertical resolution, and it includes advanced data assimilation and improved physics. This important model upgrade will bolster our hurricane forecast capabilities this year. In retrospective forecast runs, we found improvements of up to 5 to 10% in the hurricane intensity and 4 to 7% in the track forecast. We're also introducing a brand new hurricane forecast model this year. This new model, called by scientists Hurricanes in a Multiscale, Ocean-Coupled, Non-Hydrostatic Model, we'll just call it HMON, will replace the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory model, which we're decommissioning from operations after 22 years of service. The new HMON model shows superior track and intensity forecast capabilities. The combination of these two new high-resolution hurricane models, the HWRF and the HMON, for the upcoming hurricane season is expected to provide much improved guidance to our hurricane forecasters at the National Hurricane Center. My parting message today is to underscore today's primary takeaway for the public. Preparedness saves lives. Preparedness begins with each individual. So please, be sure that you know your risk, that you create a family plan, update your emergency supply kit, and make sure that you have adequate flood insurance. When a hurricane threatens, follow the forecast and listen to local officials. Hurricane season begins just 1 week from today, so we urge those who live in hurricane-prone areas to get your preparations underway. Ready.gov provides great information and resources for this preparedness, and during the season, you can follow our forecast on hurricanes.gov. Now, I'd like to invite Mr. Friedman up to the podium to deliver the outlook.
Thank you, Mary, and good morning, everyone. So I'd like to start by just echoing something that Mary just mentioned. Today's announcement really underscores the importance of preparedness, preparing for the June 1st hurricane season before it arrives. And preparedness can take many different forms. It means preparing your homes. It means preparing your businesses. It means coming up with evacuation plans and having emergency supplies on hand. It means coming up with family plans for your home and making sure your properties are secured. But whatever the preparedness is, you need to start now, not after the storm arrives. It's been a record-breaking 12 years since a major hurricane has made landfall in the United States, a major hurricane being Category 3 or higher. And while some may think that's lucky, it's been since Wilma in 2005, since a major hurricane has hit the United States. In fact, tropical storms and lesser hurricanes can be just as damaging and just as deadly. And you only have to look till last year with Hurricane Matthew, which made landfall in South Carolina, affected the entire East Coast from Florida up to Virginia. The flooding and storm surge from that hurricane caused $10 billion worth of damage and caused 34 deaths. And that was just in the United States. In the Caribbean, another 550 or more people were killed by that storm, making it one of the deadliest storms on record. Or who can forget 5 years ago when Hurricane Sandy hit the Northeast, causing $75 billion worth of damage, the second costliest hurricane ever recorded and something that we're still recovering from. And, of course, Hurricane Andrew 25 years ago, which in 1992 caused $26 billion of damage even back then. The point is that just because it's not a major hurricane doesn't mean it's not dangerous, doesn't mean it's not deadly, doesn't mean that we don't need to be prepared for it. And again, the message today is one of preparedness. Mary just talked about some of the new things that are happening within the Weather Service and the Hurricane Center to get prepared for the hurricane season. I'm going to talk to you more about what NOAA is doing as a whole to prepare for the hurricane season, because at NOAA, it's about all of NOAA preparing, not just the Weather Service. We are one NOAA, and we work together. I'm going to start with satellites. and I'm going to start with a major announcement about our satellites. As many of you know, we launched a new geostationary satellite last November, then termed GOES-R, now termed GOES-16, which is hovering over the equator right now. We have to make a decision soon or now on where to move that satellite. We have two geostationary satellites in operation at any given time, one on the east, one on the west. I am announcing today that we have decided to move GOES-16 to the east when it becomes fully operational later this year. We made that decision because from that position on the east coast, it can see all the continental United States. It can see the Atlantic coast and the Gulf of Mexico and the Midwest, where the biggest storms arise. Before it becomes fully operational, we still intend to use GOES-16 to image hurricanes and tropical storms this season. So we will still be even using it now before it becomes fully operational. As you probably know by now, because we've touted it so often, GOES-16 provides 4 times the resolution, 5 times the refresh rate of our prior satellites, and the images coming out on the internet and publicly are really incredible. One of the most powerful instruments on the new GOES-16 satellite is the lightning mapper, which allows us to see lightning in the clouds like we've never seen before. And this is significant because it allows us to track storms better and to predict how they are forming more quickly so that we can forecast better. Of course, beyond satellites, our Office of Marine and Aviation Operations will continue to fly its hurricane hunters into hurricanes. Our P3s will continue to fly into hurricanes, gathering data and information that improves hurricane forecasting by as much as 30%. We have a new refurbished hurricane hunter in operation this season. We're very excited about that, and we'll continue to use the latest technology, including our Coyote drone, which we've developed over the last couple of years, which takes data from the bottom of the storms near the ocean, which have traditionally been it's a very difficult area to gather data from to, again, improve our forecasting. In NOAA research, we're very excited to announce that we will be using a new dynamic core this year called the FE3. This is really the heart of our new weather model. It's developed right here within NOAA, within our Princeton laboratory, and it's going to power experimental hurricane forecasting this season and should provide improved forecasting. And finally, within our ocean service, we will continue to use our small boats and our ships and our planes to work with FEMA after the storm to deal with emergency response and damage assessment and to make sure ports and our shipping lanes are open after a storm. So again, NOAA is getting prepared across all our lines, and we would ask you to be prepared as well. So now on to the 2017 Atlantic hurricane season outlook. Overall, the outlook reflects the expectation for a weak or non-existent El Nino, near or above average sea surface temperatures across the tropical Atlantic and the Caribbean, and average or weaker than average vertical wind shear across that same region. These climate conditions typically point to an above normal season. Still, the climate models are showing considerable uncertainty, which is reflected in the comparable probabilities for an above normal season and a near normal season. Specifically, NOAA is predicting an above normal season is likely at a 45% rate. There is also a 35% rate chance that of a near normal season and only a 20% chance of a below normal season. More specifically, we are predicting the Atlantic hurricane season will produce a range of 11 to 17 tropical storms, defined as having a sustained wind of at least 39 miles per hour. 5 to 9 of those storms will become hurricanes, defined as having a sustained wind of at least 74 miles per hour. And 2 to 4 of those hurricanes will become major hurricanes of Category 3 strength or higher, defined as having winds of at least 111 miles per hour. This season has had a running start when Tropical Storm Arlene formed over the eastern Atlantic in late April. While rare, it is not unheard of to have these preseason storms, and that storm is being accounted to in our predictions and in our models. And as a reminder, our season outlook predicts a range of storm activity in the entire six-month period across the Atlantic. It does not predict when, where, and how these storms might hit and if they will make landfall. So in summary, there is a potential for a lot of Atlantic storm activity this year. We cannot stop hurricanes, but again, we can prepare for them. And I want to send that message again, that it is very important for us to prepare for the season now. As Mary mentioned, the most dangerous part of a storm is not the wind, it's not the rain, it's the flooding and the storm surge that occurs afterwards. So we need to be prepared for all of that in the upcoming season. With that, I'd now like to introduce FEMA's Acting Director, Robert Fenton, who will talk to us more about preparedness. Thank you.
Well, thanks. As said, my name is Bob Fenton. I'm the Acting Administrator of FEMA. It's good to be here this morning with NOAA. We enjoy a strong partnership with NOAA over the years. And definitely what they do and what they provide helps us respond to Americans during disasters. And so I thank them for that and for the new technology that they outlined today that will help us be even better prepared and help our local authorities with being able to make better decisions with regard to evacuation orders. And it's important that everyone know their evacuation zone. And I appreciate the forecast for this year's hurricane season. As was stated earlier, I think it's been some time, a little bit over a decade, since we've experienced a major hurricane hit the continental United States. And when I look back at my 20 years, some of the most costliest disasters that we've had have been hurricanes. In fact, I think in the history of FEMA, 8 of the 10 most costliest disasters have been hurricanes. So what's the forecast mean to FEMA? It means that it really only takes one storm, right? And we need to make sure that we're not complacent and not inexperienced because the length of time that it's been since a major storm's hit the United States. And we need to make sure that we're prepared for not only a major storm, but any event that threatens the United States. The good news is key data will be available earlier than ever to make informed decisions, and so that it's important that we prepare. Right now, we started the preparedness for this hurricane season by doing exercises with our state and local counterparts and within the federal interagency at the cabinet level. We'll start briefings to the president and other key decision makers that will be involved in this year's decision. But probably most important is individual preparedness, and we talked about that a little bit throughout the previous briefers, but really it depends on individual preparedness and that individuals are prepared to help themselves. And so I want to offer a couple tips to individuals out there to make sure that they're ready for this hurricane season and are not complacent. And I urge you to take a couple of minutes with your family to make sure you complete a communications plan. How will you communicate, assemble, where will you go, how will you know where you are? All those things need to be answered before a hurricane arrives. Make sure that you have an evacuation plan. You know your evacuation zone, which route you're going to go, and how you will get there if you're told to evacuate. It doesn't need to be hundreds of miles away. Sometimes it's easier to identify a friend or a relative outside the evacuation area and make sure that you account for your pets within your evacuation plan. Make sure that you have stuff to include food, medications, and some extra cash that you, your family, and pets will need for some time if you're on your own. Think about how you'll charge your phone. As we've seen in previous events, when hurricanes happen, after hurricanes, usually the first thing to go out is power, and we need to make sure that with today's information flow through your phones that you're able to continue to get information, to continue to stay in communication, and know where to get assistance at. So have a plan on how you will continue to keep your phone charged. Install the FEMA app on your phone. It will help you provide information as far as threats to your area. It provides also checklists, maps of shelters, and if you don't have connectivity, you're still able to access emergency tips in English or Spanish. So urge you to download that. As earlier, they talked about getting insurance. Most homeowners' insurance policies do not cover damage or losses from flooding. Remember, flood insurance takes 30 days to take effect, so make sure you do it before the Weather Service or the Hurricane Center produces the first hurricane threat coming at the United States. Now's a good time to look at where you live, what your risks are, and whether you need flood insurance. So the time to buy is while it's dry. Check on your neighbor during an event, either before an event to see if they need help. Check on them right after an event. The best time to meet your neighbor is before you need to, right? So let's get out there. Typically the first person to help you is your neighbor, and let's make sure that we have those relationships and that we know who needs help in our community. I think one of the key things that individuals need to be able to do is follow information from their local emergency managers. So anytime weather threatens, follow the instructions of your local officials, and they will point you in the direction or at least be able to articulate the risks in your area and give you recommendations of what actions you should be taking if you're not sure what those actions are. Also, if you want more information, you could go to ready.gov and get additional information from there to help you in preparing for this hurricane season. So build a more prepared nation that leverages technology, it's important to acknowledge that there's more we can all do, whether at home, at work, and in our community, to be in a stronger position to respond when disasters strike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fenton, and thank you to all of our speakers this morning. Also want to reiterate a point that Dr. LaPenta pointed out, that we have Dr. Jerry Bell here. He's the lead seasonal forecaster here who could address all the science behind these charts on the walls here and the Hurricane Outlook. We are joined by an audience on the phone as well, and we're going to alternate between taking questions in the room and on the call. So also I'll ask that questions be relevant to the Outlook itself. Any other questions off topic, I'm happy to address offline, so please see me immediately afterwards. Operator, can you please provide instructions on how callers can get into the question queue?
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, for the first question.
Operator, we're going to start with questions in the room first. My colleague Keely Belva on the side here has a microphone. So if you have any questions in the room, please raise your hand. And before asking your question, just please state your affiliation and who your question is directed to. Thank you.
This question has to do with GOES-R. Regarding GOES-R and the decision to position it over the east, was the sole factor the upcoming active hurricane season?
So that was not the sole reason. It was really that it was placed so that it could oversee the entire continental United States. It can see the upcoming tornado season. It can see the Atlantic coast. It can see the hurricane season. It won't become fully operational, actually, until later this year, and then it'll be positioned in the east. And so it was really a decision that it can be the most impactful placement in the near term. You need to understand that we are sending another geostationary satellite up scheduled for the spring of 2018. So in relatively short order, we will have another geostationary satellite with the same capacities as GO-16 prepared to go, and then we can place that one in the west. But in the short term, we were looking at where the most impactful weather is.
We have another question in the room.
So my question is in regards to the storm surge, the new warning system that you're putting out. To the average person that might get on the government site, will there be different types of graphics for them to look at and understand those new warning systems? How will you go about explaining it to just the average person that might get on the website?
Yes, thank you. So, you know, I mentioned a couple of new approaches that we're taking to the graphical forecasts. And so, yes, there is information on our websites on how to interpret the graphs. And we also have the new information when you're looking at the cone that shows the extension. And we have the new information on time of arrival. So all of that information is available on the websites. And as we said, it's important to have an independent storm surge warning and watch from just the overall tropical storm warning as well to specifically let people know when there's a threat of flooding.
Thank you. And we'll take a question from the phone. Operator?
Your first question from the phone lines comes from Jennifer Kay with Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. My question is for Dr. Bell. Last year you spoke about potentially seeing signs of the end of the active period for hurricane activity in the Atlantic. And it looks like conditions this year are pointing toward an active season, and I wondered if in the long view are we still thinking that maybe we're coming to the end of this active hurricane period, or is this a sign that we're still very much in a very active storm period?
This is Dr. Jerry Bell. We still don't know if we've gotten out of the high activity era for Atlantic hurricanes or not. Since 1995, we've seen a lot of very active hurricane seasons. And then 2013, 14, and 15, we had below normal seasons or near normal seasons. So the question came up, are we out of this high activity era? Well, the answer is we really don't know. This high activity era is driven by a climate pattern called the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation, and that pattern historically lasts anywhere from 25 to 40 years. We have measures of that pattern. One measure is saying it's still in its warm phase and supporting more hurricanes. Another measure is saying that we may have gotten out of that warm phase and we're in more of a neutral phase of the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation. So right now, it's not clear if that AMO has transitioned out or if we're just seeing shorter-term variability with that pattern and we could, in fact, still be in its warm phase. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question from the phone lines comes from John Schwartz with New York Times. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks, folks. The storm surge forecast tool last year, I believe, was labeled experimental, right? And there were moments when it was pulled. Am I getting that right? What's the status of that going to be this year, and also the sort of extended wind forecast that you're putting in? How are you going to watch and match it to actual conditions, and, you know, how are you going to warn people about the newness of it all? Thank you.
I'm not sure which product you're referring to. It could be that you're thinking about the storm surge flooding inundation graphic, and that will still be available. We call it the potential storm surge flooding map, And so that's giving you a graphical interface with quantitative information in terms of the geographical extent of where flooding will be. That will still be available. In terms of the newness of everything, we will certainly be briefing emergency managers so that they understand the information, doing lots of local outreach. We'll still have information in the local hurricane local statements as well as information from the NHC public advisory. So all of those will point to those new products and information.
All right, thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from Andrea Thompson with Climate Central. Your line is open.
Hi, yeah, I think this would be for Dr. Bell. I'm wondering, you know, if you guys do an evaluation, you know, postmortem of these seasonal forecasts and where information on the performance of this forecast might be located on your website.
This is Jerry Bell. We do verifications for the outlooks. And remember that we give the predicted ranges with a 70% probability of occurrence. So for each of the ranges of named storms, hurricanes, and major hurricanes, we would expect each of those to be accurate about 70% of the time, about 7 in 10 seasons. And that's where we are for both the May and August outlooks. Now, when we first started the outlooks back in 1998, we didn't have the sophisticated dynamical climate models that we have now. Since 2008, when the NOAA's climate forecast system came online, our seasonal outlooks have improved dramatically. And since that time, we have been repeatedly matching our expectation for being correct 70% of the time on those ranges. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Greg Porter with Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, this question is also for Dr. Bell. You know, with the understanding that El Nino or the ENSO signal isn't the only mitigating factor for the outlook, can you talk to us a little bit about the uncertainty this year? Is it higher because of the uncertainty in terms of, you know, if a neutral ENSO conditions will develop later in the summer or even an El Nino conditions? Is the uncertainty greater, do you think, this year, or is it about average?
This is Jerry Bell again. I think there's always substantial uncertainty in predicting El Nino and La Nina, especially at this time of the year when the model skill in making these predictions is fairly low compared to the rest of the year. So this year we are in an ENSO neutral state right now, no El Nino or La Nina, and the models are quite mixed as far as whether El Nino might develop as the season progresses. And they're also mixed as to whether, if in fact El Nino developed, will it become strong enough to actually impact the hurricane season. So those are both really critical aspects of making the seasonal hurricane outlook. At this time, the latest Climate Prediction Center forecast on El Nino indicates that we have approximately equal likelihood of El Nino or neutral conditions, about a 45% chance of each, through the hurricane season. So El Nino might not develop. The average of the dynamical model forecasts and the statistical model forecasts are both indicating weak El Nino, but again, it's not clear if it'll be strong enough to suppress the Atlantic hurricane season. So this kind of ambiguous El Nino prediction combined with expectations for warmer Atlantic Ocean temperatures across the tropical Atlantic and Caribbean Sea, along with near average or weaker than average wind shear, that's really the basis behind our prediction for an above normal season most likely. And at this time, there's really not much of an indication at all that the season will be below normal. So the bottom line is, as was mentioned by our speakers, we're expecting a lot of activity this season, whether it's near normal or above normal. That's a lot of storms, a lot of hurricanes. So now is the time to make sure you're ready for another potentially active hurricane season. Thank you.
Operator, we'll take one final question from the phone before we return to the room and conclude. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Joanna Wendell with EOS.org. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering, how do the vertical wind shear and the sea surface temperatures and El Nino, how do those things sort of interact to affect the hurricane season?
Sure, this is Jerry Bell again. El Nino acts to suppress the Atlantic hurricane season, and it does so by increasing the wind shear, by creating more sinking motion in the atmosphere, and also increasing the atmospheric stability, which means it's much more difficult for these huge thunderstorm systems to develop, and it's those thunderstorm systems that ultimately could become the tropical storms and hurricanes. Just to step back a step, the wind shear refers to how the wind speed and direction change as it goes up through, as you go up through the atmosphere. If the wind shear, if the wind speed and direction change a lot, that's strong wind shear, that suppresses hurricanes. If there's relatively weak changes in wind speed and direction going up through the atmosphere, that's when these huge cloud systems can really strengthen and then become the tropical storms and hurricanes. So weaker wind shear favors more hurricanes. And, of course, warmer waters provides more fuel to the hurricanes. And at the same time, when the tropical Atlantic is warmer than average, typically the trade winds are weaker than average, and overall the whole set of conditions that allow for more hurricanes to form, that whole set of conditions is more in place. So it's really a combination of factors this year that are pointing to a more active season. Whether El Nino develops and whether it becomes strong enough to increase the wind shear and suppress the season, it's not clear that will happen, and that's why we're predicting near normal or above normal season, with above normal being most likely. Thank you.
Hey, do we have any final questions in the room? So the first storm is Arlene, which we already had in April. The next, I'll do the first column, Brett, Cindy, Don, Emily, Franklin, and Gert. The entire list of this year's storm names can be obtained from hurricanes.gov. Doyle.
That's for Dr. Bell. Do you see a similar season in the past with if it stays as end zone neutral? Was there a typical season in the past few years that would have been similar numbers of hurricanes?
This is Jerry Bell again. We generally don't try to compare a single season, for instance this year, with another single season. We base the forecast really on the climate patterns and the uncertainties and the predictions of those climate patterns, such as El Nino, ocean temperatures, wind shear, those types of things. There are many seasons we've had in the past with similar expected conditions to this year, and typically those seasons are either near normal or above normal.
I have a quick question. I don't know who can answer this exactly, but can anyone comment on the recent budget proposal that the president put out and how that might affect the work that's being done here and predicting hurricanes going forward?
Certainly, I think that's one of the questions that falls outside of the domain for this press conference, but I could talk to you afterwards about that. I don't have a problem. No. Any other questions regarding the specific outlook?
This would be for Dr. Bell again. I was just wondering, since we had a very warm February and March, did that factor into your prediction at all since we had above average temperatures in the U.S.?
This is Jerry Bell again. No, that's not really a factor in the outlooks. Typically, the wintertime and springtime conditions really don't have an impact on the summer patterns as they evolve, and especially into the fall, like August, September, October. That's the peak of the hurricane season, and that's when by far the bulk of the activity occurs. So the early season conditions over the U.S. really are not a factor. Where early year conditions would be a factor is if, in fact, we had an El Nino or a La Nina, and they were expected to persist through the spring or perhaps develop later in the spring and into the summer and then impact the season. So that's how we look more at the springtime or late wintertime conditions as far as the outlooks go.
Okay, and one final question in the room, if there are any. Okay, well, the full press package is on NOAA.gov. And if you have any follow-up questions, please contact me, Chris Vaccaro, at 202-536-8911 or Maureen O'Leary at 202-578-5257. And thank you all for joining.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.